All right, everyone. Welcome to the New Dimension Comics Presents the Toddcast, episode 127, part two of bonus week. In our bonus this time, we are joined by a very special guest that I'm going to let Tim introduce because he did all the legwork on this one, and I'm very proud of him for that.
I don't know about legwork, but it was more...
Finger work. hand work. A lot of hand work.
That's what works on me, finger work.
We are happy to have Declan Shalvey here. He is a comic writer and artist. So I guess you could say probably now comic creator, since you've done both ends now. He's done a lot of work with Marvel. He's done some indie books. I think you've done some DC covers, but I'm not sure.
I've done a bit of DC stuff. Yep. I did like Northlanders and Batman and...
Nightwing. You did some Nightwing covers.
Nightwing covers. I did.
Yeah, the Nightwing cover, I remember. Yeah. He's got a really slick artwork book here that I grabbed the minute I saw it on Comic Hub. I was like, boom, this is mine. This goes to no customers but me. and he has a new book that's going to be coming out that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. So welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
I mean...
So can I forgive my ignorance? So
go ahead.
Where are you both located?
Where's your store? So, so New Dimension Comics is a 6-store chain that surrounds the city of Pittsburgh.
Okay, nice.
Yep. So I actually am at one of our more northern stores up in Cranberry tonight. That's why... Everything's a little dark. We just closed here about a half hour ago. And then Tim is mostly based in one of our southernmost stores, but he's actually in his living room right now, I believe. Or his man cave. I don't know.
It's my living room.
Right.
Six stores in one state. Like, that's a lot.
Well, yeah. Five are in one state, and then one's in Ohio, but it's pretty much in Pennsylvania. It's like it's right just over the border, like yeah. 2 miles. So they're all within like an hour and a half of the city central. So it's great, which is still a long way from Dublin. So
yeah.
What time is it right there, by the way?
It's just after 11.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's okay. I'd be working away anyway. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Okay,
cool.
Good.
But so, I looked
at, going for me.
I looked at your, like some of your books that you worked on, and I was like, I know his cover work, but man, I forgot you worked on 28 Days Later.
Yeah, that was my first American work.
Huge. And what, Hero Killers was like the first work? Was that 2000 AD that put that out?
No, that was the writer published it himself. That was the deal. I had no published work, and I was showing my portfolio around at a comic convention in the UK. And he basically said, "Hey, if you can draw a story I write, I'll publish it."
So no, I mean, really that's easy.
Well, I mean, like, you know, I wouldn't approach somebody saying, "Hey, could you draw a book for free?" But I was completely unpublished. I didn't have anything under my name. So to be fair to him, he gave me a kind of a platform for me to show my stuff. And that was the first comic I ever got published.
Cool. That's awesome.
Well, that's probably big too, coming from like Ireland, because I would imagine, you know, in the States, it's probably a lot easier to be connected. So that was probably a big deal.
I mean, the older I've gotten, the more I realize how, like, you know, how big America is. So like, you can be in America and still be so far away from so many things. But from my point of view in Ireland, like, yeah, it was not easy to get comics. I'd find them few and far between. My mom would take me to a trip to Dublin, Cork, or it was one of the bigger cities where there might be a comic book shop. So I couldn't really rely on a monthly book or anything. I just kind of got like, okay, Professor X is dead. All right, like, and then I remember like my joke is, one of the first comics I ever got was X-Men, and the next issue I was like waiting for like Wolverine, but it was like Banshee, and it was the Phalanx Covenant. So it was like Emma Frost, Banshee, Sabretooth, and Jubilee. I'm like, where's Wolverine?
Yeah.
So you kind of just end up with whatever you could get.
Right.
But I love that too, because I'm a big X-Men fan. So I actually subscribed to the Marvel Unlimited for a year. I was doing month to month, and I did it for a year just so I could get, like, I have them, you know, in my put away.
Oh, nice one.
You did those connecting covers. It was for House of X and Powers of 10.
Is that the cover? Was that reprinted?
That's just out of your
book. Yeah,
I have most of my books are in, you know, like a case or something like that, but I had this here, so it was I don't know, just getting to see you draw that and draw X-Men and all the different generations was awesome.
That was so cool because like I spent my adolescence like drawing X-Men, you know, like in poses like that. And then like years and years later, you end up like getting paid to do it. That's kind of awesome. It's kind of nice, those moments you were like, I'm actually doing the thing I always wanted to do. That's pretty crazy. But yeah, it's weird with covers like that. Like I knew that was like specifically for Marvel Unlimited. Sometimes when you do covers, you don't really know what it's for. It's just like, you know, you draw something, sure. And then who knows where it's going to end up, you know?
Right. But you did a lot of work on like Deadpool, Fear Itself, Punisher, Thunderbolts, Moon Knight. And then you also did Hulk Flatlines, which is still on the shelves. Excuse me.
Why is it on the shelves? It should all be sold by now.
Well, I mean, it's within the realm before we pull it off.
Of course,
but
of course.
Yeah. You know. there might be one or two floating around, but most of them did move very quickly, actually.
Yeah, at our location, the Immortal Hulk stuff doesn't stay on the shelf very long. So, and that was a really gorgeous looking issue. So,
thanks, man.
Yeah.
All right. So, at this point, we're going to give you the option to, we call it the origin story. So we get to hear from the creator themselves, how they got into the business, and how you kind of got to where you are. I know you just kind of touched a little bit on some of that stuff.
I'm that good. I already went in.
So, but go ahead, man. Let it rip.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I guess, I mean, I always knew I wanted to do comics, but I went to art college after secondary school, which would be high school for you guys. And I didn't really know how. I always wanted to be a comic book artist, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. And I did like the odd like kind of little short story here and there to kind of keep practicing. But it was after I finished college. I was like 21. I was like, how do I do this? You know, because this was 2003. I wouldn't have been mad on the internet at the time. It was still early internet days for me.
Yeah.
So like, I didn't really know forums or anything like that. But I remember I saw that there was a comic convention up in Belfast, and I got PJ Holden was at a small sci-fi convention. So I went up to Belfast for the first time in my life. I was terrified with all the British flags all over the place. But I met him, and he was really, really nice. He gave me a great portfolio review and told me I should go to other conventions. So I started going to shows in the UK, showing my portfolio, getting feedback, slowly and surely kind of meeting other people and getting to know other like up-and-comers and whatnot. And then that Hero Killers happened. That ended up winning like an indie award that year for like best black and white indie comic. And I was kind of doing small press stuff for a while after that. I did an Irish book called Freak Show and some graphic novel adaptations for the UK market. But it would have been 28 days later to kind of put me on the American scene, which was what I was kind of looking to do. You know, I always wanted to draw, you know, Marvel, DC stuff. And the UK market, UK people would read it, but like American editors weren't going to see it. So I was definitely trying to get work in America. And I was on a comic twart blog. I don't know if you know what that is. Mm-mm. So at the time, myself, I was on a sketch blog. So with a group of artists, we'd post a character would be picked and we'd all draw the character that week. And it was with people who you might know. It was Nathan Fairbairn, Mike Hawthorne, Chris Somney, Tom Fowler, Evan Shaner, Mitch Gerads, you know, like we were all just kind of, well, Chris probably was already like doing big stuff, but
a lot of us were just company to be keeping right there.
we all just knew each other from Twitter. So we started a kind of a sketchbog comic twart Twitter art.
Genius.
Okay. We were all kind of buddies from the early days of Twitter where you could be buddies with people and then started a sketchbog. And I think if people were probably looking at it for Chris Somney's work and ended up seeing mine too. And I think I was doing 28 Days Later around that time. So I was at a convention it was a Heroes convention.
In North Carolina here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sheldon, the guy who runs it, is a friend of ours. He's a good guy.
Oh, right. Yeah, so I have been to the store too. It's a great store. It was my first year there, maybe, or my second year there, because I was going to American shows as well, because, you know, I wanted to get seen by American editors. And Jeff Parker, who was writing Thunderbolts at the time, asked if I could send my stuff to Marvel. And I've told this story loads of times, but basically I was being too Irish and weird about it. So I apologized and told him he shouldn't do it because it'd be rude. And he stared at me confusingly. And then somebody else told me to just shut up and let him do it. And as it turned out, they needed to issue fill in for a book for Thunderbolts. It was a Shadowland crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kev Walker had just done a double sized anniversary issue. So they needed somebody to fill in. And there I was. So, yeah, so I did that, and they kind of kept hiring me after that, the fools. But that's my truncated origin story, I guess.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool.
That's over the course of 5 years. You know,
right. I was thinking about this earlier, and I said this to Tim before we got on, but I'm pretty sure I met you at New York Comic Con a couple years ago. Because I would go through Artist Alley and kind of see who was there and kind of get some business cards. And I think it was right when you were doing Moon Knight.
Okay, nice. Well, that would have been, that was 2014.
Yeah. So it had been a while ago. Yeah. I think that was my first New York Comic Con. It was nuts.
Oh, cool.
But I think I was after we started talking about you, I was I'm pretty sure I met him at some point, but it was such a while ago. And I was just trying to build my black book of cards so that, you know, when our show got big enough, we would be cool. Cause we run a convention here in Pittsburgh too.
Okay. What's it called?
Three Rivers Comic Con. And we actually focus on comic creators and artists and writers versus TV movie celebrities, because
pop culture,
everybody does that. We want to do comics.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes Heroes so great. There's a few shows like that. There's one in the UK called Thought Bubble. UK shows are more like that, old school UK shows. You have those media ones. I mean, we're talking about shows. I mean, these imaginary things that haven't happened in a while, but. I always prefer the ones with that less media stuff, because you actually get to hang out with people and chat, and you know, it's more social than less business. You know, I don't really go to show. I don't go to conventions to do business, to be honest. I go to I'll do some stuff at the show and sign stuff. I'm happy to do that, but I'm more up in it for the hangs afterwards. You know?
Yeah, same.
And the hangovers the next
time. the last New York Comic Con, I took a friend of mine with I was helping out the Action Lab booth, and I took one of my buddies who was working there to the Source Point Press burlesque after party at a burlesque club, and he was totally like, what is going on here? So I mean, I wish I could totally say, down I, for the hangs, you know.
I don't really end up going to cool parties because it's just too intense. I just end up in some place with a few mates and just getting too drunk and yelling at each other. But I mean, you know.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I missed the pub. Oh,
I know, right? I've had many like that with at Baltimore's a lot like that. If you've been to Baltimore,
I haven't, but I hear that's another good one as regards for creators.
Yeah, man, we're good friends with those guys. Like, we kind of built our show kind of after that. So if you ever do that show, or you ever want to come to Pittsburgh, we can talk about it later. But, you know, we make our own beer for our show, just so you know.
I don't drink beer, but I drink cider, which is more a drink for scumbags.
I like cider.
If you're making this, I'll drink it.
Okay, fair.
Ron wants to. Ron said that your Moon Knight art was awesome, so I just wanted to point that out because I agree with him. But
I don't know who Ron is, but he's very, very smart, and I'm going to imagine handsome.
Yes, both.
You're not wrong.
and one of our favorite customers. So yeah,
He's commenting on our Facebook Live. So
I know. Yeah, I mean that book. I think that book kind of changed everything for me, because I was doing a lot of stuff at Marvel, but I was kind of ending up on whatever, whatever they would put me on. You know, you don't really know. You're at first you're just happy for the work, So you know, you're not going to be too particular about things. But I've been there a while, and I was looking to do something more me, and yeah, that book came around at just the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I know we sold the hell out of that book, and it was great, and I enjoyed it. Yeah. So speaking of your work, let's talk about your new book. It's called Time Before Time. I read it this morning, prepping for this. Well, for the second time I read it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, and you wrote this one, did not draw. You did the cover, though.
Yeah, so I mean, I write and I draw stuff at Marvel, but I've been writing kind of like more grounded crime stories through Image for the last couple of years. I did a book called Savage Town and a book called Bog Bodies last year.
Yeah, which was great.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, yeah, Bog Bodies.
I just like, you know, it's like I really like a self-contained crime film. I like those kind of, you know, stories. But I wanted to kind of do something a bit more writing wise, a little bit more high concept, and kind of have, as a writer, play around with kind of more, you know, weird ideas. And Royer McConville is a writer who works at 2000 AD. He writes Judge Dredd there, and he's a mate of mine. But we kind of got chatting one time and just said, like, do you have any interest in like doing a book together? I don't know what made me think of it, but yeah, we just kind of got talking. It ends up kind of being a bit of a crime story anyway, but like I'm blabbing. It's a time travel crime story, basically, Time Before Time. Yeah. It's a basic, I think what I was saying today, it's like The Wire meets Quantum Leap, if that helps.
That is a very excellent way to put it. Yeah.
somebody else said it to me. I'm like, that's good. I got to remember that. I can't say I came up with it myself. But it's the idea basically is in the far future and things are terrible. Like, you know, it's pollution and crime, everything's really bad. And in order to escape the time, you can't really get out of it. But there's a criminal gang that can sneak you back to literally a better time. So you go back to like the 60s or the 2010s or whatever. So people are really, really desperate, and effectively they smuggle people back in time. And this one guy, Tatsuo, basically, he's just kind of sick of the life and he's looking to get out. And when he tries, things don't go so well. But it's drawn by Joe Palmer, who's done more 2000 AD work, actually. And I think if you like Mike Mignola's stuff, I think you'd be into it.
I thought that when I was reading it, I thought Mike Mignola.
Yeah, I think Mike's a big influence in his book. Like Paul Azaceta, or it's a lot of kind of like stylized, heavy black compositions, and
I'm going to share the cover and some of the first two pages with everybody real quick. So there's the cover, and that, I think this has a real Mignola vibe to it. And you did this cover, right?
Yeah. So I do the covers. There'd be variant covers too, but I do the main A covers for the book. Okay. But I mean, like I love Mignola. It wouldn't be that obvious, maybe, but I think a lot of my stuff would, you know, there's a lot of like graphic composition and stuff. I just kind of go in and I'm more noodly, and nowhere near as much of a genius, of course, as much of a genius. But I like it.
Okay. Then this is page one. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of like I actually really enjoyed this page, 'cause it was like you're in 1987 and the kid's like, what's the Wi-Fi password? And I'm just like, oh my God, that is hilarious.
Like the people who end up going back in time, like they culturally, they're going to not really know what's going on, you know? Yeah. If you went back to the 1800s, you wouldn't know. So although like, it's not a thing where, you know, we're looking to go back to like prehistoric times. It's not really about time travel. It's more that, it's more about, you know, people trying to escape for a better life, you know, except the way we treat time as geography in the book, effectively. Right. So they go different places, it's different times, and you can do interesting kind of narrative tricks like that. But effectively the opening scene is a family have gotten to the 80s, and the kid's like, what the hell? You know, because the guys will tell him Wi-Fi won't be invented for another 10 years. And the kid takes it very, very well.
Yeah. I mean,
sorry, go on.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, that's Joe Palmer drawing it and Chris O'Halloran coloring it. And Chris's work is lovely too. You might know him from, he's colored a lot of Immortal Hulk and Ice Cream Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris's work is great.
Yeah, Ice Cream Man really, that really screams Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, no,
at least to me it does. Yeah, I thought it was great, man. I thought it was really, really good. A lot of fun.
Actually, would you mind telling me? Because, like, not a lot of people have read it. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was actually going to say, like, so it was in last month's previews. The orders for that, I think, just are due the end of this week. No, they were due yesterday. But it's still going to FOC in May. So if you like that little bit of a preview, hop on your Comic Hub app, pre-order that bitch right now. May 5th. You have till May 5th to FOC it. If you want to guarantee yourself a copy, make sure you do that by then. We will get, of course, some extra copies for the shelf, but if you want it guaranteed for yourself, make sure you get it. Scalper guys, talking to you. All right.
I know. Thanks guys. Cause it's weird when you're doing something at Marvel, like the character, you know, people will know what the character is, so they'll have a level of excitement. But it's tough putting a new idea out there, you know, because you've got to explain what it is without giving it away. And it's always a hard sell trying to sell something new. So I appreciate the push.
It wasn't for me. It wasn't like too big of a sell because I read Bog Bodies, and that one was my kind of leap of faith because I love the artwork. But I'm like, and I know you had wrote some stuff like the Choosing Sides and stuff was like one of your early, you know, writing. So I'm like, okay, I want to see if this guy, you know, writes as well as he draws. And I read that and it was such a different book. I'm always into superheroes more. So the fact that I was able to jump into that book and enjoyed it so much, I was like, okay, this next book, whatever it is, I'm in. So
cheers, Tim. I mean, look, I love superheroes too. But creating new superheroes, I mean, no, you don't need any new ones, you know.
And I,
as much as I do like superheroes, I like, you know, it's like with Bog Bodies, it was a self-contained story. I like, sometimes I get a bit, I don't know about you guys, but like sometimes I just want a story to end and it doesn't need to be a million issues or something, you know. So that was just a nice opportunity to kind of just do something a little, you know, a little closer to home. I mean, it was literally set in Ireland, you know. But with Time Before Time, I'm definitely kind of, me, Rory, and Joe are definitely trying to do something a bit more, I don't want to say mainstream, because like a weird time travel sci-fi book isn't necessarily mainstream, but like for comics it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas like, you know, crime books are hard sell. Like at Bog Bodies, I remember thinking how like in film, TV, novels, crime sells great. Comics, it's harder. Unless you're Brubaker and Phillips, it's hard to sell a crime book. But I love that stuff personally. Like any crime book on the stands, I always check out.
Yeah, there's been some cool stuff from like Matt Fraction when he did like the Satellite Sam with why can't I think of his name?
Chaykin.
Yes, Howard Chaykin. Yeah. Like that book was crazy. That was like weird crime novel, but I like it. And then, like, we're friends with Jeff Gogol, who did the Suburban Job. It's Dead End Kids for Source Point Press. It's on the second one. And it's, like, kind of a crime novel, but it's only a three-parter, and he did two different volumes of it. And it's very interesting because it's mostly, like, these teenagers and how they have to deal with some crazy event/crime that happened, and it's really cool. So definitely check it out. I don't know what the distribution's like over there, but they're from Source.
I know. Press. I mean, we can get everything. Well, Diamond. Yeah. It's like Diamond UK. I guess it was. I don't know what's going on there now. But we can pretty much get anything these days. It used to be harder back in the day, but everything. It should be hard. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Cool.
Now, I just kind of wanted to ask you about the writing part of it. So I mentioned before about the Choosing Sides. That was one of the early ones. When you're illustrating a book, you know, obviously it's something that you've done a lot of, but what's it like writing a book and illustrating it, or even just writing it? Like what's that like, that changed?
It's kind of the same, to be honest. I was scared to write for a long time because I really like getting a script and kind of deconstructing it and making it work visually. I've said to people before, it's kind of like solving a puzzle, and I really like that. It's very satisfying. It's really hard, you know, but when you're breaking down the storytelling, that's the real comics magic. But I was worried that, like, if I was writing, that I wouldn't get to do that. And then when I did try it and I was experimenting with it, I realized, oh, actually, I'm kind of solving the puzzle earlier. You know, I'm solving it like in the writing stage. So what's nice is now when I write something, I'll write a proper script. You know, I know some writers will have like short notes that they'll work from there, but I like to iron things out a lot and work it and solve any problems in the script before I even start drawing. So I'll write a whole script. But what's nice is it just kind of clicks when you're doing the layouts, that's a whole new type of satisfying. But then it's also cool when you're writing and for somebody else, because you're putting things in there and you have a rough idea how it might look. Like I really liked where on Savage Town and on I wrote a Deadpool versus Old Man Logan for Marvel, and there was a few panels where Mike Henderson drew exactly what was in my head.
Nice.
I mean, but I didn't do any, you know, drawings for him. It just, what was in my head, boom, he put it down. And then there was other times where he did something totally different, but that was also really cool, you know. What was it doing? I'm even working with Joe on Time Before Time. He does really, really good characters. I think his character design, everyone looks different. You know, you never confuse any two characters. I kind of feel like maybe I'm not as good at that. So kind of working with other artists kind of gives you a kick up the arse as well. You know, when you see people doing a really good job, you're like, oh, that I should be trying harder. So I kind of like doing it all, to be honest. I don't, if it's a really good script, I enjoy drawing from a script. If I can do it all myself, I really like to. If I can write for somebody else, I like to. There's something enjoyable about each stage of the process. You get something creative out of, you get a different creative reward out of each way. I wouldn't want to just do one. I think I'd find that kind of frustrating, but it's great to be able to kind of, it's great. Well, as an artist, it's great writing a script and then it comes in drawn. You're like, I didn't have to do any of that. That's the best. But even that, I was talking to another friend of mine who's an artist turned writer, and we were both just saying like how cool it is seeing somebody else seeing what you wrote interpreted is really cool.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, like what the flip side was, like, because, you know, it's different when you're handed a script and you have to create out of the script. I always wondered what it was like to be on the flip side and like hand someone a script and then see what they do with it. Already have ideas for the characters sketched out, or did you just go, nope, it's all you, go for it, man?
Well, with Time Before Time, it's a little different because I'm co-writing it with Rory. So Rory did a really good job of like digging in on characters more. So what we'll do basically is we're talking about the next arc, and we kind of go through all the story stuff, and then Rory will have an outline, I give notes. So I'm kind of like, I'm not doing as much of the heavy lifting as, say, like Bog Bodies, I did all that myself, and everything, I did all that myself. So this is, in a way, is kind of a great way to have ideas, just be creative and not having to do the hard work, which is like all the, you know, all the digging down. So a lot of it was kind of bouncing stuff off each other, me and Rory, which was interesting because there'd be some things that maybe I was thinking of or he was thinking of, and finding that kind of, it's not even a compromise. It's just digging down to kind of really what you're going for. And I have to credit him, like a lot of he's really good at characters. I don't know if you saw Write It in Blood. It's a graphic novel that came out 2 months ago, I think, with the same team. It's Joe drew it and Chris colored it. And I think if you read that, you'll see some really good character stuff that Joe's really good with. And then he might rewrite stuff of mine and I'll try rewrite stuff of his. And then reading the script is always like, who's, you know, are we just trying to write over each other sometimes? but it's funny. It's great because I don't think I'd have the time to write it all, write a monthly ongoing on my own right now. Cause I'm writing and drawing something else. So it's been a great way to kind of just have cool ideas and just see a team make something really, really cool, you know? So I think I went off on a tangent there.
No, it's fine. You actually answered the question very thoroughly and I enjoyed it. So
yeah. And it was Ron, beautiful Ron, actually had asked something.
The initial question. Yeah.
That you answered. And he also said that he just ordered the book on Comic Hub. So that was all he needed to see. So,
I mean, what happens sometimes is when you write something and like say Bog Bodies, I remember people some friends saying, why didn't you draw that? And one, I really liked Gavin's work and wanted to see him draw a graphic novel. But two, just time-wise, I generally am doing something for Marvel and that kind of pays the bills, you know? And if I want to do some creative stuff on the side, I like working with good, interesting artists and colors and letters. And I'm losing my train of thought here. What I'm saying is like, I really like the book. I'm enjoying the book a lot. I think if you like my art, you will still like the book because I feel there's a visual approach to it. That Joe worked with. I don't know. I'm hoping it kind of feels like one of my books.
It does. When I read Bog Bodies, I felt like the artist that you picked was like, hey, I need you. Like you were looking for someone who had your similar style. And that's
not so much.
I just thought it complemented the work. They complemented the writing correctly.
Yeah. I mean, Gavin and I had a very similar storytelling style, which I think helped more because he actually works digitally. So we actually have very different approaches technically, but storytelling wise, like when he was handing in layouts, the two of us were really gelling. So it's generally that. It's kind of more, I don't really mind if somebody draws, but I like artists with an aesthetic, we put it that way. You know, sometimes maybe with some, let's just say Marvel or DC books, you know, the art is interchangeable. You mightn't even notice that it's a different artist. I like picking up a book where you know what the book is when you open it. You know, like when David Ayer was doing Hawkeye, that was kind of my roadmap. I'm like, I know David Ayer's work and he's great, but I know this is also not just another David Ayer book. This is Hawkeye, you know? I really like when comics, it's the same with Saga or, you know, Preacher or, you know, it's not just another book they're doing. You can tell what the book is. So it's just kind of a silly aesthetic argument. But for me, it goes a long way when I pick up books.
Yeah, I agree.
Jason wants to know if you do traditional or digital. It sounds like traditional more for you, or is it a little bit of a mix?
No, it's traditional. I color on Photoshop. I do that much at least, but no, for my pages, I messed around with digital a little bit. A friend of mine lent me his Wacom or his Cintiq, but I just didn't enjoy, I didn't like the process. I just like working on paper. I like the tactile nature of it. And I just like paper. I like ink. I also like happy accidents, which, you know, is something that, you know, like I was inking something today and I had an idea of what it was going to look like. And then it kind of went off by the wayside and I just kind of leaned with it. And those are kind of things that I think work better for working on paper. But I ultimately it's scanned and it's colored on Photoshop. So, but I like the limitations of working analog, for lack of a better term.
Mm, same. I'm a musician by trade, so would much rather play my guitar than like play a keyboard or like just build digitally. Like, not that that's bad, but there's always just something about like the feel of the guitar, the sound of the amp, the sound of like a tube amp versus a solid state amp. Like, there's a lot of things you can do with that you can kind of emulate through like a Pro Tools or something, but it's not quite the same.
I think you need to know your tools basically, and I mean, you know, this is always a hot button topic with artists, but the artists who I think work best digitally are ones who know exactly what they're doing on paper. Mm-hmm. And I worry a little bit about the like latest generation who are learning on screen, because I think that you can kind of cover up a lot of bad drawing digitally. I mean, you can cover up bad drawing on paper too, but there's something about working on paper, you need to figure it out. You know, you can't just take a part of the drawing and then move it to make it work. You have to actually rub it out and redraw it, which is where I feel you learn your lesson. You know, you're not, you know, you can end up doing a kind of a weird collage of a drawing that you did and make it work technically. But I found where you actually just need to just start all over again and learn from your mistake is when you really develop. And limitations are great for that. You know, there's something about when you're about to draw on a page, that kind of, you know, what if I mess it up? I feel like that's kind of gone when you work digitally, because there's no repercussions to a bad decision, because you can just undo it. Now, this is very, you know, I don't know the word phrase I'm looking for here. Like, plenty of people would disagree with me, but I think there's an argument that those small things are what help you really develop, and knowing the limitations of the tools and of yourself kind of forces you to develop. And I don't know if that would be the same with music for you.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, you know, especially when you're like learning how to do stuff, I haven't really played a lot in a long time. Like, I used to be in bands in college and stuff like that. So yesterday I decided I'm going to play the entire Metallica Kill 'Em All record that I haven't thought of playing in 15 years.
I've heard that album in a long time.
And I probably would say just the rhythm parts, I probably had 80% still good, but yeah. Like, you know, licks like Jump in the Fire is like, you know, you got to be on it. And I was like, oh man, my fingers are moving slow. Like, what is going on? And, you know, so you have to really like remember, there's a lot going on. Like, you have to remember to palm mute at certain points. You have to be able to, you know, move your hand to the right positions. You got to, you know, like there's some tremolo in there. So like, there's all kinds of things that you learn over the years as you build that craft. And like, I'm not like back to where I was when I started when I was in fourth grade, but I'm definitely not where I was at my peak during like my college and early post-college years. Like,
would you think if you were doing that, if you were like playing, I don't know what, you can't get like an iPad guitar yet or anything. but I think a lot of those digital tools are they're amazing at replicating something, but like,
yeah.
You know, I think there's something to be said for going back to the, what's the phrase? Back to the seed, back to the core. I think there's something to be said for that. But but look, you know, plenty of people would disagree with me and think I'm an idiot for saying that.
Well, I mean, I sometimes when I start to rewrite new things, I'll pick a drum beat on GarageBand and loop it. And then I'll just start playing different riffs and see what fits into there. And I wrote a couple new songs during quarantine. So, you know,
so an argument against what I just said would be that you use the drum machine. But
yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
So absolutely. But like, I think in all these things, it's learning how to use tools, you know, the limitations. And I mean, look, how many people innovated, like, you know, Hendrix and all that, like took something that had been used again and again and again over time and then innovated with it, you know? And I'm not sure how that's going to be done in the future with digital art, but I mean, I'm sure it will be done. People find a way to do these things, but I think there's a small thing about the limitations of working on paper. I think stop you from getting too complacent. And I think there's a lot of digital artists I see who, not everybody, of course, some people are just doing some amazing stuff, but I just kind of see they're just putting lines down to put down lines, and they're not thinking about why they're putting down the line. And that sounds really pretentious, but I am pretentious, so.
I mean, I know guys that do a good 50-50 of it, where they'll do the main character, the foreground in on paper, and then scan it in, and then they'll put all the background in digitally later. So like, that's like a fit, you know, there, I 100% see your side. I actually prefer to see the original sketches on paper, because I like to look at that kind of stuff. And yeah, I'm starting to get into this where I am starting to collect original art pages from books. So for me, it's way cooler to have that piece than a print, because a print, like, there's no real, like, you can't own the file. Although I guess, actually, I just saw this in the news that people are buying, they're claiming one specific file, which is like super crazy encrypted, as the original file of an art piece.
Is that the NFT stuff? Like, is
this? I think so. And they're paying dumb amounts of money, and then they're like burning like prints of it. And I'm just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's all mad. I agree with you, but like, we're of a certain age though, you know, like the generations coming up, that may not mean as much. But then again, maybe the generation after that, they're going to really value stuff, because everything's, so much stuff has become like digitized, you know. But look, at the end of the day, it's everyone's different, and everyone's going to find their own thing, you know. I was very down on digital art completely for a long time, but like, I've seen some amazing stuff that's kind of made me, I won't say I've changed my mind, but I will say that I've definitely been challenged seeing a lot of really incredible stuff. So you know, it's not down to the tools, you know, the tools do matter, I think, but ultimately it's down to the person using the tools. I'll pick up something if it's digital art, if it's amazing. I do tend to prefer stuff that's done on paper, but you know, but sometimes you can't tell.
Right. All right. So,
that was a very inside baseball conversation.
Oh yeah. No, it was good. I think a lot of people actually like that kind of stuff. We had a couple similar ones with a couple different guests that we've had that do art, and it's always good to just hear how everybody's approach is and what their opinions are on different things, just because, you know, it changes how, I always say, like, if everybody did the same thing the same way every day, the world would be really boring.
Absolutely.
I always say it.
So like, if you that's why we carry a ton of different books, because everybody likes different things, and just because you don't like one thing doesn't mean somebody else doesn't. It's fine.
But you know, if everything was Spider-Man, then it would be a very bleak world.
Right. all right. So I pulled a couple either covers or books that you've worked on that I want to share with people that I find are some of my favorite works by you. And if they're not, you can totally correct me, because I had to search through Diamond to find some of these to get the photos, so I didn't have to actually dig through my collection and scan them all.
Sure. Always. So. That's me. All right.
Oh, man. So I fucking love Banshee. So
same here, man. Same here.
So this is one of my favorite books.
That was great to do. That was like a couple of years ago now, maybe. Although it feels like last year. But it's mad how you can be at Marvel for years and not, like, I haven't really worked on Spider-Man, for example. I've drawn him like 3 times and I've been at Marvel for like 11 years. So I was asked to do this Banshee variant. One, brilliant, you know, because I guess drop Banshee. it was a variant for Uncanny X-Men, which,
right,
you know, younger readers may not know, but like, you know, Uncanny X-Men was basically the original X-Men book. It's something, a weird sentimental thing to be able to do a variant for Uncanny X-Men, you know, and of all the one time I got to do it, it was Banshee, so that was pretty cool. That background is actually it's the Cliffs of Moher, which is in my home county, County Clare. Except the castle is fake. The castle, I had to make it Banshee's castle. He's technically from Mayo, but like, I figured, sure, you know, Marvel aren't gonna know.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But that's actually one of my favorite. Even though I think the pose is very obvious, it's a very like bland superhero pose, but I still think I managed to kind of pull it off a good cover there.
Yeah, I enjoy it. All right. This is a Moon Knight cover.
That's so sick. I love that.
And I like it. Go ahead.
Sorry, that's actually one of, I did, that's the third version of the same cover. I don't know if you would have seen it.
I know. I like this one because it's Kanoshu, not actually Moon Knight.
Yeah. That was fun. Actually, it's weird. I'm just having flashbacks. I remember I was in New York not too long before I got offered the gig, I remember I was walking around the village a bit and just taking lots of photos of buildings and stuff. And I totally used that reference for that cover.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, no, I'm really, I really like those ones.
Cool.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah. We actually sell this graphic novel a lot. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. But I think I did pick up this variant when it came out because I just really, or this cover when it came out, because I just really enjoyed it. It kind of brought me back to my childhood watching the movie.
Oh, cool. Great.
I just want to say too, that I think Captain Ron is mm-hmm. the third in the trilogy, the Escape trilogy. People don't believe me, but I think Captain Ron is
possibly, possibly. So here we have a Bloodshot one. So this is like the last, this is the last run they did with Bloodshot, I believe the last full run.
I think so.
Yeah. With Tim Seeley. I really enjoyed this run, but this cover just really like it nailed Bloodshot for me. I love the use of the red negative space for the eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't too, I don't know, didn't know Bloodshot very well, but for me, when I'm doing, because that wasn't a variant, I was doing like a run of covers. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I try and have some kind of visual element that I can keep as a through line. And you know, that red dot is so great. So I really wanted to keep like a limited color scheme and just really use that red dot across all the covers. And that just makes it fun for me to do because it gives me kind of a design thing to play with. Every new issue, there's a new scenario and it's how do I make it work. So that was great. I really enjoyed those.
That's awesome. Star Wars Poe Dameron. And this is a variant, right? Yeah.
It is, yeah. That's the first Star Wars cover I did. And that was a tough one, man. I'm not actually a big Star Wars guy. I like Star Wars, but I'm not crazy about it, you know. Such a pain in the arse getting the right reference. Because the TIE fighters are different in the newer films. They're like, they've got extra bits on them, and yeah. Getting his X-wing right, because you don't just Google X-wing and draw the X-wing. They're all different. Likenesses I was worried about too. That's why he's from the side, because Oscar Isaac is more, I think he's got a strong nose and brow. Yeah.
That had to be a giant pain in the ass drawing all those little TIE fighters, though.
A little bit, because like I said, I don't like, you know, use digital models or anything. So like I think I bought a small little toy. I was using that a lot. They're weird because if they're too tall, they look wrong. If they're too stumpy, they look wrong. They're all perspective, basically. they're pains in the arse. The X-Wing was cool, though, because it was right up in the foreground.
That's awesome.
But also, I got a great kick out of drawing, what's his name?
BB-8?
BB-8, yeah. That was my favorite. That's my favorite part.
That's awesome.
But I do quite like drawing like messy tech. So the Star Wars stuff is fun that way.
Great.
I love to do those covers.
Oh.
Why didn't all those issues end up being third printings?
I bought not just all of the main covers. Nobody liked me at the store. I bought every House of X cover. And then when these came out, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get any of the second, third printings because they were just doing black and white versions with just like the logo color. And then I saw these, and this is like straight from a scene from inside the book.
Yeah, which I thought was cool. I mean, to be fair to second printings, to be fair to Marvel, I mean, you're not going to know necessarily what's going to need a second printing. So you can turn around a recolored cover pretty fast. But I think because these weren't being printed straight away, they had a bit more time, and it was the editor's idea to have like take a moment from the book and basically do a cover of that. And I think they would have had some suggestions, but ultimately I was able to kind of go, this is the moment I want. And I read the issue, I loved the issue, and I was just like, if I could do a cover of, you know, because when you're drawing pages, you know, sequential panels are a whole other thing to covers. So being able to take like a moment from the book and kind of really expand on that. And I had actually been to Israel the year before and had taken lots of photographs of when I was in Jerusalem. So I'm like, this is great because I get to use like all the photo reference I took for the cover. And I had started coloring my own covers as well. So that, I don't know. I think that cover to me feels like now and then you do something where you feel like you've leveled up a bit. Like mm-hmm. say Moon Knight was that for me, but yeah, this cover as well, I think is one of those.
There's one with Mystique and Destiny too, I think.
Yeah, well, what happened was I did one for House of X, Powers of X, the first three issues of both series. And I also tried to make sure that the House of X cover and the Power of X cover were kind of similarly composed. So that was House of X. The Power of X cover for issue one was Xavier kind of doing a similar pose, but with a different background.
He had like the computer screen, I think, in front of him. Yeah.
Yeah. Then with issue two, I think it was Magneto's head with Xavier neck behind him, with Moira's face. And then the other one was Destiny's face with Moira in reflected and pipe. Like, that was kind of fun. It was fun to have those limitations and try come up with cool images, you know? If the other issues had gone to third printings, I would have done more. Like, I was kind of waiting to hear back. Nice. But like after the first four issues or whatever, they stopped needing to do third reprintings.
Well, that Destiny one, I think I like that one a lot because it's really powerful, because that's a powerful moment in that book where they basically burn her alive. So you're kind of grabbing that, and it's like, wow, it was a really cool way to get to, you know, do that. So.
Oh, thanks, man. Punisher.
So I really enjoy this purely for the sharks.
Is it just because you like sharks?
Or
just
I do. Also, what's really cool is my buddy Matt Horak actually did the interior.
Oh, right. Matt. I haven't talked to Matt in the yonks. Yeah, Matt has taken over the book. I mean, I assume you can see the skull in that cover, can you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, I mean, I'm such a genius. You probably can't see. I kind of clearly see that. I similar to what I was saying about the Bloodshot cover is, I had come up with something for that series where it's a skull somewhere in the cover. So I would read what the issue's about and then try come up with a way to make it work. So those that run of covers with Becky and Steve Dillon and then Matt. I really, really loved working on those.
That's awesome.
And I do like drawing sharks. I did an issue of The Massive once. It was about a megalodon. So like it was a, I'd never drawn a shark before that, and man, they're so cool. I mean, they're hard to draw because their shapes are so sleek, but you see some photography of them, they're so effed up. They're cut to pieces, and you know, they're the dinosaurs of the sea, basically. Yeah, they're really cool to draw.
I think I have another one in here. Oh, there it is.
Ah, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
There's another shark.
Yeah. Well, that's one of
Hey, look, you get to draw Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the three times. The only other times I've drawn him was he shows up in a panel of Thunderbolts when I was drawing that. And that's awesome. I wrote a Venomverse story where Spider-Man shows up at the end. I mean, part of it was just so I get to draw Spider-Man. But I wrote that story too. I remember the editor saying we needed a line. So technically I have written and drawn Spider-Man.
That's awesome.
But I've only drawn him three times. But that was a fun one.
This is actually one of my really, really big favorites because I loved that Venom series.
Oh, thanks, man.
It was really awesome. It's actually my favorite Venom series. I liked it.
Really?
I liked it better than Donny Cates.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what was it? I was talking. I did Ryan Stegman's podcast there a while ago, and I just said like, yeah, I worked on Venom before it was cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I'm a big Toxin fan too, so.
This was the cover that got it started too, because this was Declan had posted something like the background on your phone says a lot about you. And I said, well, what does it say? Because I have, and this photo was my background. And
that's hold on, when did I draw this? 2013. Bloody hell. Oh my God.
And I said, yeah, your photos on my phone want to be on the podcast. And he's like, I didn't even know you had one. And I said,
well, because I know you, I recognize you from Twitter. Like we've,
yeah,
talked back and forth a little bit. But yeah, I didn't realize yeah, you had one. But sorry, yeah, I'm getting a little bit going down memory lane here. And so why, like, I remember when I came up with all that kind of tentacly stuff for Toxin, I'm like, why am I doing this to myself?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
So. Oh, cool. Thanks, man.
All right. Here's one of the Nightwing covers. I just really enjoyed the this just reminded me of like old school Nightwing. Like it actually it kind of gave me like the vibe between Nightwing and like Batman Beyond. Like it's kind of the vibe I got from it.
I'll be honest, I'm not mad about that cover. I actually quit. quit after doing that one because I wasn't enjoying the process. But that one's okay. The first one I only ended up doing two. First one I liked. This one, it's fine. It's not my best stuff. But I think I realized I wasn't going to be able to do my best stuff on that gig. So I just kind of, it's one of the few things I kind of stepped away from.
It's all good. Daredevil Annual 1.
Yeah, that one. I really like this one, and I was happy with it. But I remember when I posted it online, everyone went mad. I mean, sorry, in a good way. It sounds like everyone was annoyed. No, everyone went nuts about it, which I'm glad because you never know. You can be personally happy with something, and you put it out there, and you know, everyone's like, "Oh, that's cool." But some things kind of take off more than others, and yeah, everyone really loved this cover. Which is great because it's not like it's not a splash page of, you know, Daredevil looking cool. He's like this small in the image, but it's more like there's more building on that cover than anything else. But I really liked that it kind of clicked with so many people.
I enjoyed it because of like the re-elect Fisk on one side and then Stick being graffitied on the other side.
Yeah, it was. I think originally I just had the composition, but because it was an annual, I think it might have been an anniversary month too. They wanted me to kind of include more Daredevil stuff. That's why Bullseye's in the background and Foggy's down below. Just kind of make a bit of a legacy cover, I guess. But anytime I get to do a Daredevil cover, I try to bring my A game.
That's awesome.
Anything other than Daredevil, I don't try at all.
Right. I know you didn't do the cover to this. I just want to make sure people know that 28 Days Later was your first American work, and it was freaking awesome, and you should go check it out. More Venom.
No, that's cool. I mean, look, doing Venom was like doing Spider-Man, Batman. It was right up my alley, you know?
Yeah.
I also wanted to do as much Philadelphia stuff in there as I could because, Colin had moved him to Philadelphia, so I wanted to try and make as many iconic covers for Venom as I could. That was my, because it was my first, but I got to do Winter Soldier covers and I was pushing to get covers on Venom. And then when I did get them, I wanted to make sure I was doing like really good ones.
I just always love this one.
Plus I got to design Mania as well. I was really happy with that one.
Yeah. I really enjoyed like how that character turned out in general. So then, some crazy iconic Moon Knight right here. And this one, like to me, this is all about negative space, like the use of negative space. And I love when people can use it well, especially like under the eyes where it's like a little bit of beat up. You know,
I like when I can chance my arm and get away with stuff. remember, I don't know if you saw everybody was doing the sketch in the final tweets.
Mm-hmm.
And I put this one up and I think everybody was kind of like, fuck you, Declan. Because it was just, you know, the thing. But I had other ideas for the first cover, but I remember really wanting this one. And I think there were some they weren't 100% sold, but I think Warren really liked it. I mean, look, I could have done something a lot more showy, but my thing with Moon, with this book, was like to grab people's, you know, by the eyes, I guess, because I'm going to see covers. I just wanted to really grab people's attention, and the logo treatment and everything. We really tried to make something that looked, that popped on the shelf. So those covers that were, they're half black, you know, shape composition. But I felt that pulled your eye in. Like, you're not going to confuse that for a Green Lantern cover. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I do kind of laugh that, like, one of the most basic covers I've ever done at Marvel, I mean, it's white as well. Like, it's, you know, there's a bit of gray on the moon, on the crescent moon. Otherwise, it's just a black and white cover. But I love it. I mean, fair play to Marvel for letting me do it, you know? Yeah. I don't know if I would have gotten away with that at another company.
I love that when they had to do the second print, they had to change all the red to blue. So that was it. So, there's the cover for the art book that Tim already kind of showed off.
Yeah, that was nice. I was looking to do an art book myself, actually. And I was talking to Marvel, and they'd been doing those monograph books, which are really cool, actually. There's a lot of really cool ones. But yeah, they asked, I got to do a new cover, so I just tried to do basically all the characters I've kind of worked on in 10 cool. years. Cover.
All right, we'll stop there because I think there's only like a couple more, but we want to get to a couple other random questions.
Sure.
Because we like to ask things that, or we try to ask things that other people don't. So
my PIN number is
so Tim, I'm gonna let you do the first one and then I'll go and we'll do like two each. Because okay. We're already at about an hour. So
I was wondering video games or board games / card games.
No.
To both.
No, I don't really play video games. Okay. I used to play them a lot, but then when I got serious about comics, I just stopped. But my housemate has I was playing a bit of he had the Spider-Man game there last year. I was the first one. I was messing around with that. I don't they just take up so much time and I just don't have any, you know. I am playing a board game online with some friends. I'm playing HeroQuest.
Nice.
Yeah, which I actually didn't know about. My friends all played it when they were kids. And so it's an actual board game, but there's a thing on tabletop program where you can play tabletop games. So I play that once a week with some friends just to do something social. But they had to twist my arm. I don't generally play board games. I don't like fantasy stuff, but they really twisted my arm. But it has been fun. And what was the other one, Tim?
No, it was just video games or board games, card games. I was kind of putting board games and card games in the same category.
Gotcha. No, I was playing a Star Trek game there for a while, but it was the bridge crew where, you know, you and your friends are on the bridge.
Yeah.
Messing around. So, but I mean, yeah, there were more, I did like that social element of playing that game, but yeah, it's less about playing games and more like having fun with friends. But I'm so stuck for time. I just draw.
All right. So my first question is going to be, if comics wouldn't have worked out for you, what was your backup plan? Because for me, music didn't work out. So now I'm in comics.
Well, the honest answer would probably be dead in a ditch somewhere. Because I didn't have a backup plan. I mean, fair play to my mom for encouraging me to do what I wanted to do. But like, out of both luck and pig-headed ignorance or determination, but I managed to make it work. But I didn't have a backup plan. I went to art college. I mean, I wasn't gonna get a job from that, you know. In fact, I tried getting some jobs after art college, and they're like, "What did you do in college?" I was like, fine art, like, you know. so thank Christ comics worked out. I wish I had a good answer there, but I got nothing.
I mean, I was really curious to see how you answered that because I'm only 3 months older than you, according to Wikipedia. Like, you're January 82, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yep, I'm October 81. So
okay.
So you know, growing up in the same kind of realm, which actually is kind of funny because a lot of our tastes are similar, even though we grew up on different parts of the planet. So.
Well, I saw so much American TV, you know, clearly I was into comics and stuff like that. So I think, you know, there's a lot of connective tissue with that generation, say, than say any generation beforehand where, there were such cultural differences, but like, you know, especially in Ireland, like we, you know, I grew up loving like all things American. So that you kind of get into all that, you know. But you know, also come from like, you know, I was kind of, no one thought comics was going to work out necessarily, you know. It was like, I tell people, like, saying I wanted to draw comics was like saying I wanted to be an astronaut. It was like, good luck with that. thankfully it worked out, but like, yeah, it was, I mean, nobody really understood what the hell I was trying to do, but I knew though, you know, it would not be what I would advise young people to do now, but like, I just went all in as much as I could on everything. And, oh God, thank God it worked out.
Hard work, it pays, kids.
Well, that's true. Yeah, yeah. That's true. I mean, yeah. Honestly, I mean, it was hard work. I was, you know, I was on the dole for a while, working a portfolio. Then we'd get like part-time jobs the weekends to like save money to go to conventions, you know, getting by on nothing for years. You know, like it was a tough grind. But I managed to slowly work my way up bit by bit by bit by bit. And thankfully it worked out. You kind of forget how much work it was years afterwards when you're at the other end of it. But yeah, it's not like, I think also nobody knowing or understanding what I wanted to do meant that I kind of did have to work harder, because I didn't have friends in the industry or I didn't know anybody or anything like that, you know? So I was coming in completely blind. Yeah, so I don't know why I went on about that.
No, that's a great answer. So I enjoyed that. All right, Tim, what do you got?
All right. Well, the first one was easy. This one's a little harder. If you could be any character, if you could be or be a character in any comic book, but you can't be the main character or any, you're just a background character, which book would you pick? You'd be living in that universe.
Could you, I assume you've asked this question before.
No, I have not.
Okay, I was trying to give
so
you.
So, like, if you know, if I would pick, like, just like a homeless guy on the street in Amazing Spider-Man, then now I'm every day I get to look up and see, you know, see him swing by.
Nah, that wouldn't cut it, Tim. I'd want more attention than that.
I mean, like, I guess I would need a little more parameters on the options of my answer. Like, are we talking like you can't be like the title character, but you can literally be anybody else.
Superheroes, your background characters. So the, like, guy walking down the street, somebody,
right? But
on
like, could you be like Foggy in a Daredevil book? Okay, so you can't be the foreground.
Oh, that's way harder then.
Yeah. I told you it was harder.
So like you couldn't be Alfred in Batman.
Nope.
I can't think. The premise of that question means that the characters are so unrecognizable that I can't remember any. Okay, I'm just trying to think.
I don't even. Oh man.
See, I was Spider-Man right there, just to be able to see him.
I guess, yeah, know, I guess mine would be something like weird, like. Like, I'd be like the guy that owns the deli down the street from Avengers Tower. Like, because you know that you're going to see one of those guys.
I'd be the guy who says something weird. And I'd like, trying to think. I can't think of a specific example, but you know, like, when there's a weird, you know, like a Bruce Campbell cameo in Spider-Man. And I don't mean because it's Bruce Campbell, but like,
yeah. The one-liner guy.
Yeah, one of those weird interactions you have that are kind of funny. Like, that's what I would like to be.
Okay.
I mean, ultimately, I'd like to be Grills from Hawkeye, but, you know, that's a little too foreground, I guess. So. All right. Since you're from Ireland, I have heard many stories about the Blarney Stone. And one of them is that at night, everybody just gets drunk and pisses on that thing and then watches everybody kiss it the next day and laugh their ass off.
I have heard that.
So my question was going to be, have you ever seen this or done this?
I have heard that story.
Okay,
from Cork people. The Blarney Stone is in Cork. And I have been to the Blarney Stone. I did not piss on it. I wouldn't do that anyway. Also, it was the middle of the day, and a guy, there's a guy who will hold you, because for people who don't know, you actually are held upside down off the edge of the castle to kiss the Blarney Stone, and I just couldn't be arsed doing that. One, two, yeah, you wouldn't be able to pee because there'd be guys standing there kicking out. So I haven't done it, and I think I've been there twice. But yeah, I haven't kissed it either, because while I may not have pissed on it, I certainly didn't want to run the risk of kissing stone that the locals have pissed on.
Right.
But I don't know if it's true or not, but you know, it's been around a while. Someone's probably done it.
One of these days I will find the truth.
It is lovely, actually. It's a really, the castle, I've been, yeah, it's really nice. If anyone's ever gets a chance to go see it, it's really nice.
Awesome. All right, I think we got time for one more. Tim, go for it.
Mine was already kind of answered. I was going to, the age-old question of Star Trek versus Star Wars, and I think through the course of this, we already got our answer.
Yeah, no, I'm a big Star Trek head, for sure. I mean, I like Star Wars. Like, I've gone to see, when the movies come out, I go see them. I just don't particularly think they're great. I love The Mandalorian, though. That was savage. That was really, really great. But I'm way more of a Star Trek head. I like science fiction, and I don't consider Star Wars science fiction. There's a great joke in 30 Rock where someone just tries to describe Star Wars, and he goes, "Oh, the film about the monsters." Because that's what it seems more to me like. I'm not one of those people who needs to crap on one or the other, you know. I'm definitely more Star Trek.
Cool. All right, my last question is, because I don't get a lot of UK friends that I can talk about things with.
I'm not UK.
Sorry.
That's okay. Happens all the time.
I'd
let it slide, but it's like, if anyone from Ireland saw this, they'd be like, "Hey, you can't let that slide."
Well, no. I meant people that I kind of kicked that into my own head because you said Marvel UK earlier, and that's what made me say that. Sorry about that.
No worries.
But in that general area of the world where 2001 AD was much bigger than it is here in the States, mm-hmm. who is your favorite judge, and do you feel that Batman Who Laughs is just a blatant ripoff of Judge Death?
I'm actually not a big 2008 fan.
Okay.
It was always on the newsstands when I was a kid, but I was way too square. I wanted superheroes. The 2008 stuff was too dark for me. Whereas like now it's like totally up my, that would, if I was a kid with my current sensibilities, that would totally be my thing. I didn't start out in 2008. I haven't worked for them. It's weird. Anyone my generation previous, everybody went through 2008. So it just didn't work out for me that way. I don't know that many judges. So I just go, I'll go with Judge Dredd because he does look cool. When I saw the Batman Who Laughs, I was like, that's just
Judge Death. What the hell?
The only one who thinks this is Judge Death.
You're right.
But I haven't read the book, so I wouldn't dismiss it outright like that. But I was kind of like,
yeah, right. That's kind of how I was. I was like, do they not know? Like, is somebody gonna get sued at DC?
Yeah, I imagine 2008 they're pretty annoyed. The book seemed to do very well. I haven't read it, so I don't know if the characters the same or not.
It's all good. I've always been curious about that, and my friends from overseas that I can talk about that with, that were more exposed to it because, you know, it came late in the US, and you know, outside of the movies, a lot of people in the US don't know that it's a comic book. I don't know how it is over there. I bet more people over there know that it's a comic book than the people in the US.
Yeah, no, they would. People would be aware of 2018, you know, because it is in newsagents in any shop you go to. It's easier to get technically than say a comic book because it's not only in comic book stores. I used to see it all over the place.
Yeah, okay. It's like peanuts. It's like peanuts in the US. You flip open the Sundays
culturally it's known and known here for sure. I mean, way more in you know, the UK itself, yeah. but definitely here as well. I mean, people older than me, it was huge with. You know, any comic book fan I met that was older than me, huge 2000 AD fan.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps it up for the most part. Next week we have Doug Wagner hanging out with us, who did The Ride and a couple other books. And
is even Newton coming out?
He does. That's what we're going to be talking about, I think. He just sent me an email with a bunch of things today, and I was too busy to look at it, so it's probably in there somewhere.
I was just going to ask what it was. I'm like, I'm not going to advertise his book.
Right. But remember, guys, you can still get Time Before Time on your subscription. You can get it pre-ordered. Hop on. What?
It's out in May, right?
May 12th.
Yes. April. And at FOC's... early May, early May, end of April. So get on it now. Just hop on to Comic Hub, open up your app for your favorite store, punch it in there. It'll pop up. We will gladly get it for you.
Has Comic Hub been good for you guys?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
My local was one of the first stores to kind of get on it, and it was it seems to have done really, really well for them.
That's awesome.
Actually funny because when. Over here, when you go to set up a subscription, like for the first time, and you have to pick your local store, I think the GPS always starts us in Ireland.
or somewhere.
I thought maybe it was just my phone, but then customers would come in. They're like, I don't know what to do. I'm in Ireland. It's like, this isn't where my store's at.
Well, it's just such a lovely, picturesque place to start with, you know?
Yes.
No, it's been good for me because I remember when before Comixology was sold by Amazon, I remember how easy it was to get stuff digitally. And then they stopped doing that. I was like, the impulse was kind of gone. But I do like that about Comic Cop is you still have the impulse buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You pick it up from your store when it comes in. Like, so I don't know. I think it's been really good, but I'm glad it's working out for you guys.
Yeah. I've known Stu Coulson, who created it for at least 5 or 6 years now, at least.
Okay.
And I think actually the first time I met him is when he very first pitched it to Diamond and Comics Pro. We were at Baltimore Comic Con, and I remember being like, who's the Kiwi smoking outside with the party shirt on? Because he was wearing like a Hawaiian style party shirt. And I was just like, I'm going to go hang out with this guy. And he was like, yeah, check it out. I'm doing this thing. And I'm just like, I'm in. I'm so in. Because, you know, I am always looking for ways for our stores to do things better. And this is definitely one of those things. Like, we can target this book to people who bought other things that you've done, which is what we're going to do with it. And, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah, it makes it easier for you guys to sell the books you think will appeal to the people who you think will like them rather than hand sell every single thing to whoever comes. I mean, it's just so much work.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it like, we've actually had some of the stores have gotten to the point where our previews orders are down 70% because there's like only 30% remain still using paper previews. Everybody else has converted to just opening their app or opening the website. And it's been great, man. Like I can't suggest it more for other stores, and I've helped a lot of other stores get on board as well, especially during shutdown, because we had it for like a year, and then all these stores went on it when the world shut down, and all of a sudden I'm getting phone calls like, how do I do this thing?
I spoke to one friend of mine who has a store, and they didn't have it beforehand, but they said because during lockdown, they gave them the time to actually integrate it. Yeah. You know, so that's nothing bad to hear. Whatever's putting comics in people's hands is great.
Yeah, and it was great because it turns your inventory online immediately, so you can just shop what's in the store, and that's what everybody was doing. So, and now we're getting guys like we've sold to some bigger name creators. Like Matt Rosenberg bought a bunch of trades off us a couple times.
Oh, yeah?
And he actually,
bigger, I thought you said bigger creators.
There's a couple more too, but we also have like some bigger names that just shop in the store because they live around here. Like Ron Friends lives 20 miles from where I'm sitting, Scott McDaniel is a friend of mine and lives in lives in the eastern end of Pittsburgh, and Pat Olive lives not too far from here, and Robert Hack, who did Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, he lives over by Tim's store. There's a lot of really great guys. Jim Rugg, Ed Pisker, Tom Scioli, all the guys that do the comic kayfabe. Those dudes are all three of those guys are dollar divers. They will come in and I'll be walking through the store and I'll trip on one of them and be like, "Oh, hey Ed, how's it going, man?"
I see why you have so many stores, because there's all these creators in that one area.
Yeah. So it's quite the hotbed. Yeah,
Western PA is a really good hub for comics. I mean, that's just our six stores. There's so many other ones that are around in the same area. I mean, there's
other guys have lived around here too. Like Joe Jusko lived here for a couple of years. Lee Weeks, somebody else too that I cannot remember who it was. I'm going to remember it later, but
it's enough of a Rolodex already.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts, but we have a really good time when we all get together and hang out, which I cannot wait to do next year. So,
oh man, I think I might just not work for half the year and just
go to con after con.
Get hammered.
Travel the world, go see it, buddy.
It's good. Start licking doorknobs or just, just living dangerously.
Right. All right. Well, thanks everybody for watching. Thank you, Declan, for coming on, hanging out with us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. Yeah, it was awesome. Don't forget to pick up the book or come in, subscribe to it.
Yep. Order this Find thing. One of us. We'll hook you up. It's fine. So, all right. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Thanks, everybody.